All right, Shabbos, say good morning. Good morning. Let us begin. Begin by thanking all of our sponsors to thank. our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Shvat. For the month of Shvat, Mrs. Selma Wolf, for dedicating all the Shomer Drashos this month with immense gratitude for the refuah from Hashem and the merit of a refuah shlemah for all of those in need and the schus of our brave soldiers and the schus of the return of all of our hostages. Our Dafyomi share sponsor today, Matt and Diane Marks, in memory of Matt's mother, Sarah Pesha Bas Moshe Mordechai Zichron Livracha. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshama will have an aliyah and the family in Nechama. And of course, we dedicate all of Maseches Baba Kama, Le'ilui Nishmas, Master Sergeant Eliyahu Michal Harush, Hashem Yikom Demo. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his Neshama will have an aliyah and his family in Nechama. So with that, let us begin. We have a beautiful daf ahead of us, a great way to start in Eretz Hashem, the new month of Shvat HaBa'alim L'Tov, with a beautiful daf of Gemara. Today's daf is Ayin 70, and we are picking up on the top of Ayin 78, top line. Amrin Aradoi. So then Aradoi to the fan. So it's a couple of really very interesting technical halachas, but not like boring technical, riveting technical. So here we go. Amrin Aradoi. Lo kas vinan or chasa al taltali. Now, this is interesting. We do not write an orchasa. Now, what's an orchasa? Rashi says, top of the daf, harshah. So, we'll say, shtar harshah. Now, if that document sounds familiar, it's because we, almost all of us, do it at least once a year. So, harshah is a power of attorney. The same way when we come to sell our chametz. So, you go ahead and you fill out what are called a shtar harshah, which empowers someone else to act on your behalf. So, that's an orchasa. Chos is a shtar shah, power of attorney. So then our Dvar wrote as follows. You cannot go ahead and write a power of attorney document over movable property. Now, why not? And why not? This is very interesting. What's the reason why I can't write the power of attorney over movable property? So the Gemara says, incredible. This is all comes out to Rabbi Yochanan. We have been preoccupied with Rabbi Yochanan for the last 2 days. What did Rabbi Yochanan say? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan, Gazov lo nesei shabaylim. But remember again, this is the famous business of Rabbi Yochanan. Reuven steals an object from Shimon. So now what's the halacha? So the Gemara says, and Shimon did not yet despair, right? Shimon did not give up hope of reclaiming the object. Shnehem einon yecholin lahakdish. Neither Reuven nor Shimon have the ability to be makdish the item. Why not? Zelafi she'enu shalo. So remember again, Reuven can't do it because the object doesn't belong to Reuven. Reuven is a thief. Zelafi she'enu b'rishuso. And of course, Shimon, because he is not in physical possession of the item. So what do you see from here? You see from here again, this the position of Yochanan, that you cannot affect a change in status in an item that is not in your possession, either because you don't own it or because it's not in your physical possession. So therefore, along those same lines, the Naradom says something interesting. The Naradom said that halacha lemaisa, you cannot write a power of attorney. So what would say? So if I go ahead and I have metaltalin, and let's say the possession of someone else, and I want to empower Reuven to go ahead and collect those metaltalin, so then Ardoim said, I can't go ahead and create a power of attorney, a shtar harshah. Why not? Because A, I don't have the item in my possession. I don't have that in my possession. And ultimately, again, and number two, because the shaliach doesn't have the item in his possession either. So halacha lemaaseh again, based on Rabbi Yochanan, neither of us have the ability to really collect these metaltalin. Okay, ike da'amri, an alternate version of this. Amri naradoi, lo kasvinan orchasa ametaltali. So the Gemara says, dekafrei. The Gemara says, dekafrei. So an alternate version of this. What's the alternate version? Then Ardoim said, you cannot go ahead and write a shtar hashah on metaltalin, the kafre. Now look at Rashi again. Rashi says over here, first I'll take a previous look at Rashi, Mishud Rabbi Yochanan, Tahoil ve'eno b'rishos ha'baylim, eno yachol lahaknoso l'shliach, hilchach im avad yachol lachzor v'litvoa miyad ha'ne'eman. So Rabbi said, this is actually very interesting. The Gemara says over here something fascinating. The Gemara says that the reason you can't write a shtar harshah on metaltalin is like this. We're going to see that the way a power of attorney works in halacha is that in order to give something, in order to vest someone with responsibility, you have to fully give over the item to them. So let's just essentially, if I want someone to act in my stead, they have to own the object as I would own the object. So therefore, again, within our Dharma saying like this, if I want to give Reuven over the ability to collect my metaltolin, that's in the possession of someone else, I have to effectively give him over title of those metaltolin. What's the problem? The problem over here is I don't have physical possession of those metaltolin. And based on Rabbi Yochanan, if you don't have physical possession of something, you cannot affect a change in status. I can't convey something over to you if I myself don't actually have possession of it. So it's an interesting idea, because we're used to the concept of a power of attorney working that I don't have to give you over title, I just have to give you over, we'll call it certain rights over it. Kamash Malam, the Gemara says, no, that's in fact not the case. Ikeda Amri, an alternate version of this, Amri Nardom, the Nardom said as follows, Lo kasvinan or chasa amataltali de kafre. Ultimately, again, when can't you write the Shtar Sharabosai? When the party in question denies liability. Look at Rashi. It's really interesting. The Kafre. Im tavi mafkid l'ne'eman bebezin v'kafrabo. We'll say, watch this. Let's say I claim, Reuven, you owe me movable property. Whatever it is. You owe me whatever the object is. Reuven denies the claim. So now that in this alternate version over there, Ardoim said, I cannot create a shtar shah. I cannot create the power of attorney in this case. Why? Time of the kafre. Now I'll say, the reason I can't do it, it sounds like, is because Reuven is denying the claim. So the Gemara says, the mechse kishikra. Because I will say, if I'm claiming that Reuven owes me, $1,000 worth of movable property, and Reuven's saying, no, I don't. So then to go ahead and create the power of attorney over this scenario looks a little bit strange. So the Gemara says, because it's Mechsek Shikra, that's why I can't create a power of attorney. Avalo Kafrei Kasinon. But it sounds like over here the Halacha L'maisa, had I not done that, right? Had Reuven not denied that claim, I would be able to go ahead and create that power of attorney. So two versions over here in the Naradoim. Version number one is you can't create a power of attorney over any object that is not in your possession. That's based on Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, version number two is you can't create the power of attorney over any claim that the other party is denying, because it's Mechsek Shikra, looks like it's a lie. Okay, fine. Rami Naradoim. What's the connection between this and our previous sugya? Rabbi Yochanan. Rami Naradoim. Furthermore, the Naradoim said, Orchasa delok siv be zil don vizahi va'apek lenaf sheikh les be mishasha. So we'll say, so now once we're on the topic of power of attorneys, and specifically the position of the Naradoim, we're adding in a couple of other interesting facts into this. The Naradoim said as follows, any Orchasa, any Shtar Hashah, any power of attorney document that does not have the following lashon. I hereby, we'll say, here's the lashon of the power of attorney. I hereby empower Reuven. Zil don, go ahead and adjudicate. Vizachi, be successful. Va'apik lenafsheich, and acquire the proceeds for yourself. Less be mishasha. Such a power of it, if it doesn't possess that lashon, then the power of attorney is meaningless. But I was going to say, what does this mean over here? The halacha is saying like this: in order for a power of attorney to work, essentially, we'll call it the attorney, the person who I'm empowering has to essentially be standing in my place. I have to give him full rights as if he was me. That's why the lashon over here is, Reuven, go and adjudicate this case with Shimon on my behalf, be successful, and all of the proceeds belong to you. Now, what was I? Do I actually have intention that I want all of the proceeds from this litigation or from this situation to go to Reuven? The answer is no. I want it to come to me. So why do I give it this lashon? We'll say, so we're going to see that in order for Reuven to navigate a claim on my behalf with a party with whom I have a contractual relationship, Reuven has to have a seat at the table. If Reuven is just kind of acting as an intermediary third party, so Lamaisa again, let's say Shimon, who's the guy on the other end of the table over here, could say, I have nothing to do with you. My agreement is with Silber. not to do with you. So therefore, in order to go ahead and give Reuven power, the operate, to the ability to operate on my behalf, he has to be vested with complete, almost like autonomy, as if he was me. Well, see, here this interesting idea. So one more time. Then our Adam say, any shtar harsha, any power of attorney that does not have written in it, Reuven, go and adjudicate this case. V'zochi, and be successful. V'apik l'nafsheich, and keep the proceeds for yourself. Less bay mshasha. Ultimately, again, it does not have any teeth. Why not? The Gemara says, my taima, mishum do amr leheich, lav bal dvarim didiat. Because again, the other party could say, I have nothing to do with this. Let me just illustrate this again. So let's say I go ahead and I have a claim against Shimon for $1,000. And I want Reuven to go ahead and take care of this for me. I want to give him power of attorney. So now the Gemara is suggesting over here, the power of attorney has to essentially say, I am hereby essentially giving this over to Reuven. Reuven, you go and adjudicate this and you keep the $1,000. Even though it's not my intention that Reuven keeps the $1,000, Reuven's going to give it back to me. But Lemaisa, if I don't give Reuven that responsibility, then what's going to happen? When Reuven goes and calls up Shimon and tries to adjudicate the case, Shimon's going to say, take a hike. I have nothing to do with you. Who are you? Who are you? If Silver has a problem, let him come to me because he's the one with whom I have the transactional relationship with. I don't have any relationship with you. Now, when Reuven takes out the Shtar HaShah and he says, yes, you do have a relationship with me. Why? Because Lemaisa, Silber gave me over complete rights in this transaction. Suddenly, again, Reuven is a party to the transaction. It's fascinating. Fascinating. So the Gemara goes like there. Amar Abai says, V'kasev bay lemechza u'lishlish u'lirviya, migo de mishtai dina apalga, mishtai dina akula. So Abai says, okay, but I'll say the truth is, even if I don't give over Reuven the entire proceeds from the transaction, but I say to him, Reuven, you know, do me a favor, go and adjudicate this on my behalf, and I'm going to give you 50% of the proceeds, or 30% of the proceeds. That works as well. Once he has a vested interest in part of the proceeds, that enables him to go ahead and operate on my behalf. So very interesting. Look at Rashi. Even if I say, Reuven, here is the power of attorney, go operate on my behalf, and you can keep 50% of the proceeds. That works fine as well, because again, the idea of Osei is that, and this is actually quite fascinating, that in general, if I dispatch someone to go ahead and let's say adjudicate a disputed transaction with a party with whom I entered into a contractual obligation, a party could say to the power of attorney guy, I have nothing to do with you, right? Go away. I'm not talking to you about this. My transactional relationship was with Silber. Once I go ahead, Abai says, the way to circumvent that is, give Reuven, who's my power of attorney guy, give Reuven an ownership interest in even part of the proceeds. Once he has an ownership interest, then he has the right to adjudicate this with the other party involved. Fascinating idea. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, fine, Amra Meimar, Meimar says, V'itafis lo mafkinan minei. So I'll say, this is interesting. So ultimately, again, if it turns out that we'll call Reuven is the... So let's just go with what we have over here so far. So far, there are four pieces that are mentioned. Two by the Naradoim, right? So number one by the Naradoim ultimately is that you can't create a power of attorney over something that's not in your possession. That's number one, right? Number two, good. The Ikad Amri was ultimately, again, you can't create the power of attorney over something that the other party totally denies. Good. Number three, ultimately, again, for a power of attorney to work, what do you call the guy with whom you give the power of attorney to? The attorney? Agent. Good agent, right? Attorney in fact. Is that the correct term? Attorney in fact. Good. So attorney in fact, right? So number three, ultimately, the attorney in fact is only vested with authority if he stands to benefit from this transaction, right? I don't know if that works that way legally, but at least in the Gemara saying like that. Otherwise, the other party to this transaction could say to him, go away. And number four, Abaye says, even if I don't give the attorney, in fact, the full proceeds, but I just give him a part of the proceeds, that's enough to allow him to navigate. Okay, fascinating. So the Gemara says another fact, number five. So Amar Meimar said, Itafis lo mafkinon minei. That was it. Is actually interesting. Let's say I appoint Reuven as this attorney, in fact, and he goes in, he seizes the property. We do not extract it from him. Now, what does this mean? Take a look at Rashi. V'i tafis shliach mishal ne'eman lo mafkinan minei afagav lo ksiv be'afik lenafsheich lishnach yuna v'i tafis shliach mamon shosi v'ikva li'atzmo lo mafkinan minei kach matzasi kasa b'tshuva sagona v'ze'ikar. So we'll see. Here's what's interesting. What's interesting is, as much as the nature of this relationship is that I appoint Reuven as this attorney, I appoint Reuven as this agent, and Reuven, let's say, doesn't give it back to me. Let's say he goes in and he keeps it. Technically speaking, you can't really extract it. In other words, it will say, in halacha, this whole power of attorney really only works with someone with whom you implicitly trust, who's actually going to carry out the agency and give you back the item. Because technically speaking, if the agent chooses to keep it for himself, we can't really extract it. Because you're supposed to remember, again, in halacha, the whole way that power of attorney works is essentially this guy becomes me. The agent becomes me. I'm really giving over the claim in its entirety to him, because otherwise in halacha, he doesn't really have the authority to go ahead and really collect. So really fascinating. So if it turns out that he decides to exploit the situation a little bit and keep the object for himself, I don't really have too much recourse. Okay, the Gemara of Rav Ashi Amar, Kevan dekasile kol demisani mendina kabila salai shliach shavya. So what is interesting, Rav Ashi says you could create the power of attorney situation even in a different situation. If I go ahead and I write in a shtar, Reuven, I hereby empower you to go ahead and collect this debt or collect this object, and I write in there the lashon of any expenses that you incur, I hereby take upon myself, that also creates power of attorney. Rav Ashi is bringing down over here that halacha l'maisa, even if I don't explicitly write, you hereby stand in my stead, or I give you the right to collect all of this, but you just write a lashon of all the expenses you incur are upon me. That's also power of attorney. Look at Rashi. Kevin the Kasa Kabila Salai. Amoshliach Shavya. Hilchach itafis mafkinon minev. Lishna kamo nami itafis mishal ne'amam. Fine, let's go back there. Simari says as follows. Vikadami, others say, shutfa shavye. Others say, no. If you write that Lashon of, Reuven, you know, I hereby ask you to go ahead and collect this whatever from Shimon, right? And I agree to cover your expenses. That's not power of attorney. Rather, what is that? That's shutfus. That's a partnership. So the Gemara says, lemay nafkamina. What's nafkamina between a power of attorney and a shutfus? Lemitvas palga. Ultimately, you know, because obviously power of attorney, so technically speaking, the understanding is, as much as I'm giving the agent the full rights to collect, but Lamaisa, the assumption is giving me back the money. As opposed to a shutfus, a partnership with the understanding from the beginning, ultimately is that what? So we're going 50-50. The halacha sash the achshavi. And I'm about to say the halacha is that in this kind of case where you write the lashon of, I hereby agree to pick up all of your expenses, that's not a lashon of power of attorney, but rather that is a lashon of shlichus, of agency. So Rabbi says, so how do we... Because this is actually really quite interesting in terms of in halacha, how do you create the power of attorney? So listen to this. So the Rambam writes in Hilchos Shluchin, Perik Gimel Halacha Aleph. Listen to this quickly. Misha haisalo karka tachas yad echad oshelo metaltalin dekadon v'ratzalaso shaliach ladun imzeh. So I just want to point out, just to frame the case. When are you creating a power of attorney? So remember again, a shlichus is a case where I just need someone to execute something on my behalf, right? This is different because over here, we're getting into adjudication, right? Reuven owes me $1,000 of land, of betal, it doesn't make a difference. And Reuven's going to contest it. I'm going to need someone to adjudicate this on my behalf. The problem is, if I just make Reuven a shaliach and Reuven shows up in Beis Din, what is Shimon going to say? Who are you? I'm not talking to you. You have nothing to do with this. So therefore, in order to prevent Shimon from doing that, we need a stronger relationship that essentially makes Reuven like me. Reuven is me when he walks into Beis Din. That's where a power of attorney comes in. That's the chilek between shlichos, even though we say shlucho shal adam kimoso, that your agent is like yourself, but that's fine. That's vis-a-vis me and the agent. But lamaisa, regarding another party, the other party, right? Remember, Reuven walks into Beis Din as my shaliach, and Shimon says, "Who are you? I'm not talking to you. You have nothing to do with this." So we need a strong relationship. That's where power of attorney comes in. So how do you do it? Hari kosev lo harsha v'tzarech liknos miado shehir shava omer lo don uzichei v'hotzi la'atzmecha kiyotzi be'inyanam elu. So this is how the Rambam paskins. In order ultimately, again, for a power of attorney to work, to vest Reuven with the power to adjudicate this case on my behalf, and to force Shimon to deal with Reuven, I actually have to give over the potential proceeds of this case to Reuven. Because what's saying makes sense. Right now when Reuven walks into Beis Din, and right Shimon says, "Who are you? Who are you?" What does Reuven say? "Who am I?" I am now the guy who has the ownership interest in this disputed claim. That's Shalom Aleichem, right? That's who I am. That's who I am. And now again, now Reuven stands to gain or to lose ultimately again in this proceeding. Without that, Reuven doesn't have a seat at the table. Okay, so there's more of a kasav lo eino yachol lo don imo mibneisha omer lo eina tabal dini. So right, Rambam says if you don't create a power of attorney like this, then ultimately again Shimon could say to Reuven, "I have nothing to do with you." So we'll say it's just interesting that from the Rambam that again to point out we do have other types of powers of attorney. Like for example, When it comes to chametz, so again, we write a power of attorney, that's shtar harsha. So again, there's different ways that shtar harsha works. According to some, it literally gives over to the Rav, you know, the ownership over your chametz. Others say, no, it really just gives over just the ability to operate. But that's because, remember, we'll say, in chametz it's different. Why is chametz different? Right? No one is objecting to this, right? Remember again, I both say, the challenge over here, the reason, I just want to point out, you could have a power of attorney that just works as an agency, right? As long as what? As long as there's no one disputing anything on the other end. So I want Reuven to execute something on my behalf, something transactional on my behalf, and there's no one contesting that. Okay, so I don't have to go through all of this. Essentially, I could just create a shlichos. This is coming up in a situation where there's an opposing party, right? I have a claim against Shimon. Shimon's denying the claim, or Shimon's upset about the game, or disputing some aspect of the claim. I need Reuven to operate on my behalf. So the halacha is saying, in that case, a simple shlichus is not going to do because Shimon could refuse to speak to Reuven. It's only if Reuven literally becomes me, then Shimon has no choice but to deal with him. How does Reuven become me? By essentially me giving over the transaction in its entirety over to him. Now he has a right to adjudicate. Okay, just a really fascinating idea. Mishnah. Ganav api shnayim v'tavach u'machar apiyam. Here we go. Back to now, we'll say, now we're going to focus a little bit more, remember again, on Tvicho Mechira. What's Tvicho Mechira? I steal and slaughter, or I should say like this, I steal and sell or slaughter an animal, specifically again, a sheep or an ox. The halacha is Arba V'chamisha. You have to pay 4 to 5 times penalty payment. 4 times for the sheep, 5 times for the ox. Says the Gemara, Ganav api shnayim v'tavach u'machar apiyem. So what's this? Now here's the case. I go ahead and I steal the animal, and two witnesses see me. And both say, and let's say again, it's the same witnesses who see me steal and the same witnesses who see me slaughter / sell. Oh, api shnayim acherim. Or I both say, for that matter, again, two witnesses see me steal. And another separate two witnesses, see me sell/slaughter. So the Gemara says, "What's halacha? Meshayim tashlumi arba v'chamisha. You have to pay. Plus, you have to pay the 4 to 5 time penalty payment." So we'll say. So the chiddush over here in this part of the Mishnah, which is going to be the focus of our initial topic of the Gemara, is you have two separate sets of witnesses over here, right? In other words, in a classic case, there would be one set of witnesses who sees me steal and slaughter sell. In this case, Group A sees me steal. Group B sees me slaughter sell. Okay, Ganavu Machar b'Shabbos. Right. So let's say again. I stole the sheep, and I sold it on Shabbos. Ganavu Machar b'Avod Zara. Or I went ahead and I stole it on I stole it and I sold it to Avod Zara. It's not a Shabbos case. I stole it and I sold it to Avod Zara. Ganav v'tavach b'Yom Kippurim. Or I went ahead and I stole the sheep and I shechted it on Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur. That's what happens when there's too long of a break between Musaf and Mincha. And it will say, Ganav v'tavach b'Yom Kippurim. Ganav mishal aviv. Ganav mishal aviv. V'tavach u'machar. Now, we'll say, you're going to see, by the way, we're not going to get into these cases right now. We're going to go ahead and go through this in the Gemara. We'll say, essentially, all of these cases we're going to see, there's competing liability. Like, for example, the Yom Kippur case is the clearest one, right? I stole. Now, stealing on Yom Kippur, there's no heightened liability for stealing on Yom Kippur. Stealing is stealing. Shechting on Yom Kippur, technically speaking, is a chi of kares. So now both say, so now I've done two things. There's a chi of kares, but there's also financial liability. So remember, all of these cases that we're mentioning over here, the Gemara is going to talk about through the lens of kimlei b'derabimineh. That whenever you do one act, which results ultimately, again, in dual liability, one capital liability, one financial liability. Financial liability is set aside because, again, unfortunately, the person is going to be put to death. So we're going to see how all of these cases fit in. Ganav Mishal Aviv, V'tavach U'machar V'achakach Mesav. This was an interesting case. Over here, I stole my father's sheep. I slaughtered it and I sold it. And afterward, the father died. So also, what's interesting about this case is after the father dies, who owns the sheep? Who owns the sheep? The son thief. But technically speaking, again, the theft, slaughtering, selling occurred before the father died. Again, we'll see all these cases. Ganav v'tavach v'acharkach higdish. Or again, I stole, I slaughtered, and then I was makdish. In all of these cases, mishalim tashlumi arba v'chamisha. You still have to pay the 4 and 5 time penalty payment. Again, so we'll go through all of these cases in the Gemara. Ganav v'tavach l'refuah l'klav. This is interesting. Let's say again, I stole a sheep, and I slaughtered it, but for medicinal purposes. In other words, my intention wasn't to eat the meat. My intention was, I need the meat for medicinal purposes. Ole klavim. Or interestingly enough, I stole and slaughtered, but it's not for human consumption. I was going to give it to my dogs. Or hashochet v'nimtzeis trefa. Or I steal the sheep, I shacked it, and it turns out the animal is a trefa. Or hashochet chulin ba'azara. Or I go ahead and shecht an unconsecrated animal in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. In all of these cases, mishalim tashlumi arba v'chamisha. In all of these cases, you'll still pay the 4 and 5 time penalty payments. Again, we're going to go through all of this in the Gemara. Reb Shimon Podi b'shnei elu. Reb Shimon ever patters you, ultimately, again, in the case of you shecht animal where it turns out to be a trefa, or you shecht chulin, unconsecrated animal in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. So we're going to see that Reb Shimon holds shchita she'ena re'uya lo shma shchita. Any shchita that does not produce a kosher consumable animal is not called shchita. It's not called shchita. So if you shecht an animal and it's a trefa, right? Ultimately, again, the animal is not fit for consumption. You shecht chulin ba'azara, not fit for consumption. Therefore, Reb Shimon is going to say there's no liability in those cases. Again, we'll see this in the Gemara. We'll say, let's focus on case number one. Leimu masis n'lo k'Rabbi Akiva. Our Mishnah does not reflect the view of Rabbi Akiva. What does Rabbi Akiva say? We'll say, so remember again, what was the first case in the Mishnah? First case in the Mishnah was, I steal and I slaughter an animal. Now, we'll say, now what happened over here is, I went ahead and I steal the animal. First set of witnesses see me steal. Second set of witnesses see me slaughter and sell. Right? It's not and or sell. Now we'll say, so now what happens is I have two sets of witnesses for one for theft, one for slaughter selling. So the Mishnah still said, you know, there are two sets of witnesses. I am chayiv arba v'chamisha. I am chayiv the 4 and 5 time penalty payments. The Gemara says, our Mishnah does not reflect the view of Rabbi Akiva. Why not? Well, this is incredible. The Rabbi Akiva ha'amar davar v'lo chatsi davar. We'll say Rabbi Akiva holds. Now, again, the Pasuk is talking about Eidos. Api shnei edim o api shlosha edim yakum davar. Rabbi Akiva holds, we'll say that when the Torah speaks out testimony, the Torah says, based on the testimony of two witnesses, yakim davar. Now, we'll say what Rabbi Akiva says about that is, in order for testimony to be valid testimony, it has to be a complete testimony, not a partial testimony. So therefore, again, Rabbi Akiva would say something very interesting. Rabbi Akiva would say that in order to be chayiv, ultimately, again, arba v'chamisha, what has to happen? There has to be one set of witnesses, both for the theft and for slaughter and selling. Right? You can't have two sets of witnesses. Davar means witnesses have to testify about an entire testimonial unit or a event unit. You can't have multiple sets of witnesses. Look at Rashi. Davar velochatzi davar. Api shnayim edim yakum davar. Vahani edi tivicha diktani b'mas nisin. O api shnayim edim acherim. Chatzi davar kamesadi. So let's listen to this. So in this case over here, where you have witnesses who testify that I stole, and a separate set of witnesses who say that I slaughtered, so neither set of witnesses is testifying about the entire event, which would make me liable. Because remember again, the witnesses that testify that I stole, okay, so that's that I stole. What's the halacha for theft? That's kefil. The witnesses who testified that I slaughtered, all they're testifying is that I slaughtered a sheep. For all they know, it could have been what? It could have been my sheep. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva would decide. So what's interesting is that the Mishnah says there is liability. Right? So the Mishnah says, Allah Almighty, saying if there are two sets of witnesses, there is liability. It doesn't reflect the view of Rabbi Akiva. The saying, I'm Rabbi Yossi. It's incredible. Kisha halach abba chalafta itzah Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Lil mod Torah. So what's this? Rabbi Yossi said as follows. When abba chalafta went to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri to learn Torah. V'amri lei, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri ate to Abba Chalafta. Others say it was the opposite. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri went to Abba Chalafta. Amud Beis. Amar Lo, he said to him, Hari Sha'achla, this is a very interesting case. Hari Sha'achla Shana Rishana Bifnei Shnayim, Shnia Bifnei Shnayim, Shlishis Bifnei Shnayim, Mahu. Sebo said, listen to the following situation. Halacha L'maisa. If I live on a particular piece of land, and again, I lived there for 3 years uncontested. And then Reuven comes along in year number 3 or year number 4 and says, that's my property. That's my property. So we'll say the halacha is we do not believe Reuven. Now, obviously, it presupposes that what? That Reuven was present during those 3 years, knew and saw that I was living there. So obviously, if he did not oppose my residency during those 3 years, I've created chazaka. So here was the shaila. What happens if you have three sets of witnesses? Year one witnesses that I lived there unopposed, year two witnesses, and year three witnesses. Can those three testimonial units combine to serve as my chazaka? So the Gemara says, Amarlo, harizu chazaka. So he said to him, yes, that works. That is a proper chazaka. Amarlo, afani omer kain. So he said to him, I also agree who the he is, either Abba Chalafta or Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Right? I also agree with that. But you know who disagrees with it? Rabbi Akiva. She Rabbi Akiva Omer Davar Velo Chatzi Davar. Because we'll say ultimately again, Rabbi Akiva was the one who said Davar Velo Chatzi Davar. But I'll say, by the way, I just want to point out how beautiful this is, Rabbi Akiva's Shita Davar Velo Chatzi Davar. He'll say, you know, what did Rabbi Akiva say? Rabbi Akiva said, in life, either do something completely or do not do it. Davra v'lochatzar. Also, remember again, how does Rabbi Akiva die? Right? Rabbi Akiva dies ultimately brutally at the hands of the Roman, scraping off his skin with iron combs. Remember, what does Rabbi Akiva do in his last moments? He says to his Talmidim, he says, my whole life, I always wondered, how will I be mekayim the pasuk of how will I go ahead and do that? How will I give myself over in totality to the Ribbono Shel Olam? Now, in these final moments, I recognize that I have the ability to literally give my life. You would think to yourself, Rabbi Akiva, that's what you're bothered by? How are you going to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha? That's what you're bothered by? Right? At the end of Rabbi Akiva, you do so much. Rabbi Akiva did a lot, but Rabbi Akiva always wanted more. That was the godless of Rabbi Akiva. Even when he was Rabbi Akiva, he was never content with the Rabbi Akiva he was. He always was focused on the Rabbi Akiva he could be. That's davar velo chatzi davar. Right? I will say, so often in life, we get to the chatzi davar mark. Right? The halfway mark of whatever the life initiative is. And what happens? We're like, gets halfway mark. And how do you feel when you get to the halfway mark? It's pretty good. You know, I could dwell here. I could live here at the Chatzi Davar Mark, right? I've gotten most of the job done, most of the initiative done. I'm doing pretty okay. I'm managing just enough. And I'm going to say, you fill in the area where this is. Your relationship with Hashem, your relationship with your spouse, your relationship with your kids, your career, whatever you get to, like, I'm okay. I reached the Chatzi Davar Mark. So Rabbi said, when you reach the chatzi davar mark and you are ready to settle back, kick back, right, and relax in the world of mediocrity, just remember Rabbi Akiva, davar v'lo chatzi davar. We do not settle for chatzi davar. We do not settle for okay in any area of life. We do not settle for the halfway mark in any area of life. Ultimately, like Rabbi Akiva, what do I aspire for? B'chol levavcha or b'chol nafshecha. At the end of the day, again, I don't always reach the finish line. I don't always reach the mark of totality. I'm not always able to settle into complete actualization. But at least I know that's what it is that I'm aiming for. So incredible that it's Rabbi Akiva who says this. The Gemara goes right there. So therefore, again, Rabbi Akiva didn't like this residency halacha. So according to Rabbi Akiva, if you have two witnesses for year one, two witnesses for year two, two witnesses for year three, that does not work. That does not work. You need one set of witnesses for all 3 years. So the Gemara goes right there. The Gemara says, "I'm Rabbi Afilatim Rabbi Akiva." So therefore, again, back to our Mishnah. So therefore, our Mishnah must not reflect the view of Rabbi Akiva, right? Because again, remember, the Mishnah said that if I have one set of witnesses that saw me steal, and a second set of witnesses that saw me slaughter, sell, that works. That I be chayv arba v'chamisha. But in Pashas, according to Rabbi Akiva, you should need one set of witnesses for everything. So the Gemara says, not necessarily. I'm Rabbi, I feel Tim Rabbi Akiva. Not necessarily true. Our Mishnah could be reflected by Rabbi Akiva. Why? Mila mod Rabbi Akiva, v'shnayim omrim, kidesh, v'shnayim omrim baal. So let's listen to this. Rabbi Akiva agrees in the following case. Let's say two witnesses see that Rachel received kiddushin from Reuven. And two other witnesses saw that Rachel had relations with Shimon. You've got a problem, right? Now, we'll say, so now, I have two sets of witnesses that, right? So two sets of witnesses about Kiddushin, two sets of witnesses that Rachel had relations with a different man. So the afagav, the Eidei Biyah, Tzrich, the Eidei Kiddushin, we'll listen to this. Now, even though the Eidei Biyah need the Eidei Kiddushin, right? So the witnesses who saw that Rachel had relations ultimately again with Shimon, so their testimony is really irrelevant, were it not for the first set of witnesses that she was Makabel Kiddushin from Reuven. Right, because otherwise, witnesses saw that she had relations with Shimon. Okay, so what? So what? If she's an unmarried woman, again, not good, but Lamaisa certainly, again, not an Isser Misa. So the Gemara says, the Eide Bia Tzrich Le Eide Kiddushin. So the Eide Bia required the Eide Kiddushin, but Kevin, the Eide Kiddushin Lo Tzrich Le Eide Bia. But I will say, the Eide Kiddushin don't need Eide Bia. Now, what does that mean? The Eide Kiddushin, their testimony stands with or without the second set. So therefore, again, Davar Karina Bey. So therefore, we'll say that satisfies the criteria of Davar. In other words, we'll say, here's what's interesting. What Abai is suggesting is as follows. When does Rabbi Akiva, what's Rabbi Akiva's Davar criteria? Davar criteria is, you can't have two sets of witnesses testifying about two separate things, neither of whom are giving testimony that could stand on its own. But when you have two sets of witnesses, Abai is suggesting, one of the testimonies stands on its own. Just the other requires the first, that still satisfies the criteria of Davar. So therefore, for example, if you have two witnesses giving testimony that Rachel's Mikudeshes to Reuven, and then two sets of witnesses that say Rachel had relations with Shimon, so now both say the first set of testimony, that stands on its own. It's just that the second set of testimony requires the first. Rabbi Akiva says, that's Davar. Therefore, again, Hakanami, Afagav de'edei tvicha tzvicha le'edei gneva. So we'll say, plugging this into our Mishnah, they will say, the witnesses who saw me shech the sheep, their testimony by itself is meaningless, right? They required the first set of witnesses, but however, kivan de'edei gneva lo tzvicha le'edei tvicha, davar karina. They will say, but the first set of witnesses who testify that I stole the sheep, their testimony stands on its own. So therefore, because this testimony stands on its own, that's called Davar. So we'll say, an interesting qualification of the position of Rabbi Akiva. So when does Rabbi Akiva say, Davar velo chatzi Davar? That's literally when you have two groups giving testimony, and neither testimony is meaningful without the other. Then Rabbi Akiva will say, that it's irrelevant testimony. However, if you have two groups giving testimony, one group doesn't need the other. The other group does need the other. That satisfies Davar. Therefore, again, even in our Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva would be okay. Why? Because the witness is testifying about the theft. Their testimony stands on its own. Just the witness is testifying that I stole, that I sold it or slaughtered it. They require the first. So the first doesn't require the second. Second requires the first. They could still work beautifully in concert together to generate liability, even according to Rabbi Akiva. I have a Rabbanan. According to the Rabbanon, who don't hold the Rabbi Akiva, the Rabbanon do hold that two sets of witnesses could go ahead and two sets of witnesses can combine. So ultimately, again, but nevertheless, they also must reject Chatzi Davar in some way. What do they reject? Let me ute. Echad Omer Echad Begaba, the Echad Omer Echad Bekresa. So we'll say, so listen to this. So let's say we know the signs of physical maturation that make a girl a katan into a nara is the presence of two hairs. Let's say you have two witnesses. One testifies about a hair on one part of her body, and one testifies about a hair in a second part of her body. So the Gemara says that would be an example of davar velo chatzi davar, right? Neither group is giving testimony ultimately, again, that is able to stand on its own. So the Gemara says, come on. Hai chatzi davar v'chatzi edosu. People say, that's not just chatzi davar, that's chatzi edos. In other words, testifying that a girl has exhibited one hair as a sign of physical maturation is what? Is meaningless. Is meaningless. That's not a testimony. Elo, lemeute shnaim omrim echad begaba, ushnaim omrim echad bekresa. Rather, Rabbi Yosef, you have to say, I'm sorry, the way we were framing the case was, one witness says the hair was on one part of her body, and another witness was saying that the hair was on a different part of her body. That's meaningless. Why? Because you have one witness, one hair. That doesn't do anything. So what's the chatzi davar? The Gemara says, shnaim omrim echad begaba, ushnaim omrim echad bekresa. So we'll say the example would be, let's say, two witnesses testify about the presence of a hair on one part of her body, and another two witnesses testify about the presence of a different part of her body. That would be an example of chatzi davar. Hani amri kitanahi, fahani amri kitanahi. We'll say, because effectively, they would both be saying that she's a kitana. Both the kitana. So that would be the Rabbanan's example of chatzi davar. So we'll say, saloch lamais, what comes out of here is as follows. What comes out of here from the Mishnah is telling me that even if I have two sets of witnesses that testify that I stole, another set of witnesses that say that I slaughtered and sold, ultimately, I'd be chayiv arba v'chamisha. That's the halacha in the Mishnah. Now, the beauty of it is, the Gemara suggests, it even works according to Rabbi Akiva, who says, davar v'lo chatzi davar. Why isn't this chatzi davar? Because I will say, essentially, according to Rabbi Akiva, as long as, whenever you have two sets of witnesses, as long as one testimonial unit is not reliant on the other, that's called davar. That's called davar. According to Rabbi Akiva, it's only called chatzi davar when? When everyone is allowed to. So for example, in the case of where, let's say you have, I'm living on a property for 3 years, and I have one set of witnesses for year one, one set of witnesses for year two, one set of witnesses for year three. So in that case, I will say, in that case, Rabbi Akiva would say that Allah Chalamaisa, the testimonies do not combine. Do not combine. Why not? Because Allah Chalamaisa, everyone is reliant on the other. But in this case over in the Mishnah, where the witnesses who testify about the theft, their testimony stands by itself, even without the guys who said that I slaughtered and sold. In that case, ultimately, again, they can come on. Beautiful. Says the Gemara, Ganav l'machar v'shabbos. So what was the next case in the Mishnah was? Now, the Mishnah spoke about this idea that if I stole Ganav l'machar v'shabbos, if I went ahead and I stole and I sold on Shabbos, ultimately, again, I'm chayiv arba v'chamisha. I'm chayiv, ultimately, again, the 4 and 5 time penalty payment. So both say, so the Gemara says, we learned that Hanya Potter. But 1 second, I will say, we said that you're Potter, right? All this is happening on Shabbos. So our Mishnah says that you're Chayiv. That you're Chayiv. And I always say, and again, the logic being Chayiv is what? What's the logic of being Chayiv? Because again, I didn't do a malacha that would generate the death penalty. So there's no kimei b'durabimine. So therefore, if I stole and I sold, remember, it's not a case of slaughter. I stole and I sold on Shabbos, ultimately, again, I'm going to be chayiv arba v'chamisha. I, the Gemara, says, v'atanya potter. But we have another brisa that ultimately says that I am potter. So, amrani rachamo, kitanya hida potter, ba'omer lo aklutz l'cha te'ina, mete'ina, see? So we'll stop over here for today. I'm going to leave you a little bit on a cliffhanger. We'll pick up with this case tomorrow. So we're going to say, we'll say that the case that we're going to be dealing with is where the sale itself generated a biblical liability for Shabbos desecration. The details of that case, Emir Tzor, we'll say, and the resolution between the Brais and the Mishnah, Emir Tzor Hashem tomorrow, Shkoyach. I will say, the two minyanim Emir Tzor Hashem,